Today on the Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Air Canada apparently decided a 10-year-old didn't necessarily need to travel with his family to Costa Rica, and the European Union creates some new car rental rules that we would love to see come across the pond.
Speaking of the whole drag people off the plane issue, our listeners have blown up the Travel Guys mailbox with questions about how much money that they should be paid to give up their airline seat, and Mark has an update at 3:20.
Last week, our youngest Travel Guys reporter, Nick Valenzuela, gave us the first half of his hashtag travel report featuring the most Instagrammable spots in California. He's back with the second half of that report at 3:35.
We have some interesting guests on this program from time to time, but the guy who joins us at 3:50 to talk about underground adults-only tours of Seattle, a foreign king who kept really strange souvenirs, and the Museum of Broken Relationships might be the strangest.
Never a boring moment here. We only have an hour, so buckle up and off we go together on the latest edition of The Travel Guys.
Brilliant job.
Here we are, the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, and the brilliant job by Albert, our executive producer today, got all the elements all in a row, and which isn't easy to do. We have such a complicated show.
And I forgot to turn my mic off.
Yeah, it's okay. So everybody got to hear me blurt something out. Yeah. But that's half the fun of listening.
Fortunately, it wasn't a bad word.
You know, here's the deal, though. It, once again, proving one of those rare things occurring on radio, live radio.
Live radio.
You know, I mean, if you listen to music stations and you hear a disc jockey on the air, probably 95% of the time.
That person isn't really sitting there talking to you.
No, they did that. They're probably home babysitting.
I didn't know that you could record a whole four-hour radio program, you know, all the commentary, and introduce all the songs and stuff in about, what, 45 minutes, an hour?
Yes, and sometimes even less, depending on the format of the station. Yeah, you just...
So, like, if you're listening to Sirius, like the 60s on 6 or the 70s on 7, those guys are not sitting there in front of the... They did all that stuff in a condensed
And if you do it the right way, the listener would be the same whether they're there or not. The intent, the conversation, you know, is going to be the same.
Well, that's the idea, is that you and I kind of know that in many cases those people are not sitting there live, but when you listen to them, you can't tell that they're not sitting there live, which is the whole point, because radio is theater of the mind, so it's supposed to be a little bit into the unknown. You're not supposed to know everything that's going on. There's supposed to be a few things that are a little mysterious.
If you listen to our What's Going On with Steve LaRosa's here on the radio, you definitely get the theater of the mind.
If you listen to this program very long, you definitely get some things that are mysterious. We actually have a guest later on in the program who's going to talk about this king who you can go to a museum, apparently, and this king kept umbilical cords and placentas or something like that as souvenirs.
You're going to have to tune in. Stay tuned for the rest of the story. Well, Mark, I didn't see or hear much of you this week.
I had a trip to Chicago and another destination that I want to talk about at the end of the show. We went someplace and did something really special this week. And I'd want to save that, kind of save the best for last there. But a quick trip to Chicago for a business meeting on Friday and then back late last night. Chicago is a most interesting city. You know, they talk about how the president has ragged on it because it has some horrible pockets of crime, some neighborhoods where people get shot on an almost nightly basis. You know, there are two of them, one on the south side, one on the west side. And I wouldn't go there, although we did drive through one of them one night, and it I was glad we were driving quickly.
Keep moving.
Exactly.
Windows up.
Yeah. But There's a neighborhood like that in St. Louis, too. So Chicago is not the only city like this. But Chicago's downtown really has a personality and a character that is really impressive, you know, and the hotels in big cities now, if you get into a city like Chicago and you're on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're going to pay, and you're in a Hyatt or a Marriott or a Hilton or something like that, you're going to pay between $200 and $300 for your room. I mean, really and truly, it's gotten a little bit bizarre. We had a great, quote, discounted rate at the Hyatt Regency in Chicago, which is a really nice hotel, I might point out. It's been added on to a couple times. They really do a good job in that hotel. The level of service is excellent. And we paid $200, and we were tour operators who, you know, the hotel was thinking, well, we might get some business from these guys someday. So let's give them kind of a good rate. And to them, a good rate was $199. So I can only imagine what the rest of the poor suckers were paying. But we were right on Upper Wacker Drive there, right off the river in Chicago. And I could get to the Magnolia Bakery, which was...
Not the Mongolian barbecue.
No, that's kind of different from the Magnolia Bakery, which has the most amazing things that will not help your waistline at all. But anyways, Chicago's a great place to visit.
What was the resort fee?
There was no resort fee. Amazingly, when they have tour operators as guests, the resort fees tend to go away because they don't want to.
I'm gonna start using that.
Sometimes tour operators.
I'm almost a tour operator. I know one.
The packages we sell people have a little bit more value is that in many cases we can get resort fees negotiated out of contracts with hotels. And so you don't have to pay $25 for the pool towels, long-distance phone calls, and the right to walk on the bridal trail, you know.
Well, the travel guy's email, if it isn't already slammed, now they're going to be slamming us of you for not having to pay resort fees.
Yeah, well, that's the reason that you use a travel professionals to try to get you out of some of that stuff.
There you go. Okay, you ready to do it?
We're ready.
Okay, at the beginning of every Travel Guys radio show, we do... the travel news, and with the latest, here's Mr. Markoff.
All right, so we mentioned in the headlines, Air Canada, so this is the deal. This guy buys tickets, Brent Doyle, he buys 4 tickets for his family to go to Costa Rica in August of last year. He goes to check in online in March, and only 3 of his 4 family members are given a seat. So he gets a little concerned and he drives to the Charlottetown Airport in PEI and Prince Edward Island. And he's told the flight is overbooked and her son is just unlucky. He doesn't have a seating assignment. And unless somebody doesn't show up, he's not going to get a ticket. So in the airline's computer's wisdom is taking a family of 4 and told the 10-year-old, you can't go with your family on vacation.
So, bad program.
Yeah. So they drive to Halifax, Nova Scotia. If you know your Canadian geography at all, Charlottetown to Halifax, Charlottetown's on an island, requires a bridge crossing. It's to Halifax, 4 or 5 hours probably, driving time. And so they drive to Halifax to get another flight, have to spend the night, have considerable expense and the like, and they can't get the airline to compensate them in any way. So they go to the news media and explain all of this stuff. And it hits the news media airwaves. And then suddenly the airline, Air Canada, is like, oh, we're so sorry. We're so sorry. It makes you wonder how many times this crap happens. And nobody ever hears about it. Although with phones and stuff like that, I mean, would you have really seen the guy drug off the plane? No, you would have heard people talking about
only
how the guy got drug off the plane. But anyways, so apparently that kind of stuff is still happening. Police say... at the Indianapolis airport, this was last week, a lady was charged with battery after she was accused of striking a Delta Airlines employee. She did it according to the probable cause affidavit. She did it because God told her to.
I've used that.
She apparently
approached... My wife never buys it.
The airline counter asking to purchase a ticket. When the employees stated the counters were closed, they told her numerous times they were closed. Howard lifted her hand and hit one of the employees on the side of her head behind the ear. She then jumped over to the other side of the ticket counter, called the police, and removed herself from the area. So this is a lady who's, you know, not elevator doesn't stop on every floor. But anyways, it's not a good time. You see the American Airlines thing with the guy, They kept calling that man a flight attendant, but I'm certain it was a gate agent.
Listen to this, people, because, you know, if you've been listening to the news, you've been getting, there's been some confusion. Mark,
I'm pretty certain that American Airlines' whole situation that was going on didn't involve a flight attendant. It looked to me like it involved a gate agent, not a flight attendant. And it was the gate agent who was trying to take the stroller from the lady. And obviously something occurred before the gentleman got up. If you've seen the video, American Airlines had an altercation on one of their flights a couple days ago, and it involved a lady with a stroller and somebody trying to take the stroller to store it from her, and her probably not being English first language and not understanding exactly what was going on. And she started crying, and she got hit with the stroller when they tried to take it away from her. And a passenger finally decided that he'd seen enough, and he got involved, and the captain the whole time just kind of stood there, which is kind of weird because it's all happening in the galley on his airplane, and he's in charge.
He had a pose, if you will, with the hand on the arm and the other hand on the chin. That's the I just want to observe, please don't make me get involved.
Another example of a gate, in my opinion, a lot of these folks who are gate agents, they are overtaxed. They got 92 things going on. They're trying to get the flight out. Oftentimes, for some of these small flights, there's only one agent for the 50 or 70 passenger planes. They've got a flight crew coming off, a flight crew going on. They've got disabled people. They've got unaccompanied minors. They've got an order that they're supposed to board everybody in, and people asking them questions and stuff like that. And they're probably paid about $15 an hour. And so it's no darn wonder that these situations are occurring. It's amazing they don't happen more often, especially on the non-mainline flights, because you've got people that, if you get lucky and you get a talented gate agent who is underpaid, overworked, and still doing a good job, then you're lucky. But if you don't get one of those people, then you may get into one of these situations where something goofy happens, like putting 70 people on an airplane when you had 74 of them, and you knew that what? That's just insane to put people on an aircraft knowing that you don't have enough seats, and now you're in this enclosed environment. And listen, if you'd drag that man, that Chinese doctor who has a fairly questionable history, away kicking and screaming and beating him at the gate, it would have been, you know, a lot more interesting to watch. I mean, it would have been just as interesting as watching it on there. Anyway, we're supposed to be doing the travel news here. What else do I have? European car rental. They've come up with some new rules. Basically, it is a specific way that cars are checked back in to check for damage. And also that all the fees and everything on car. Have you ever seen car rentals, Tom? You know, with the 91 different fees and stuff. All has to be included in the basic price that you're quoted. So you, no matter what all the fees are, it's real easy to compare apples to apples. New EU car rental rules that could make their way across the pond.
Love that.
I would hope. De Young Museum has a great exhibition, Summer of Love Experience. This is something, the Summer of Love is kicking off in San Francisco. It's through August the 20th. It's Tuesdays through Sundays at the De Young Museum, so they're closed on Mondays. Admission is $10 to $25, depending on age and all that kind of stuff. The Summer of Love Experience, Art, Fashion, and Rock and Roll. Sports Leisure Vacations is taking a busload of folks down there. It's already sold out, and we're already planning for another one. So,
did you see they had the first kickoff of the Summer of Love events in Golden Gate Park on the 420 event?
How cool is that? I took a friend up there from out of town on a Saturday morning. It was last Saturday morning, and about 9:30 in the morning in Haight-Ashbury, things are really pretty quiet because, you know, nobody's gotten up on Saturday from the Friday night before. And that's going to be a really cool place this summer. It's amazing to think that the people who are part of the Summer of Love are 68, 70, 75, maybe even years old. So it's kind of cool. I hope a lot of those folks will go back there this summer. It will create a great vibe. Okay, quickly, travelers left behind $1 million in coins and currency in airports last year. TSA says that was $100,000 more than they left. You know, that's just things that people forget to pick up.
Change falling
and
out of their pockets.
There's a lot of other stuff here, but we're kind of sort of out of time. The Freddie Awards are coming up this week, so we'll have those next week. And American Airlines leads the airline complaint list for March, and that's your travel news for today.
We're going to dig into the Travel Guys mailbag. A lot of questions from folks in regards to what should I ask for for compensation if I get bumped off my flight. Mark Hoffman, the expert, will give you some ideas. That's next here on the Travel Guys. Welcome, everyone. You're joining me, or we're joining you, depending on where you are. We are the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman, Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, here every Sunday from 3 to 4. You can follow along at TravelGuysRadio.com. If you are anywhere near a computer, certainly this is a great day to do it. A little later on, we're going to have a special interview with our hashtag travel guy, Nick Valenzuela, and the things he's going to be talking about have photos that are on the website TravelGuysRadio.com. Mark?
Well, we have, you can go to travel, speaking of the website, if you go to TravelGuysRadio.com, and many people do, I encourage you, if you have a travel question or something, even if it's a question about a trip that you have coming up or something like that, send me a note. I'll try to answer them personally or on the air, if the better ones. And there have been a lot of questions over the last week and a half about the whole guy getting dragged off the plane and the compensation rules and all that kind of stuff. I mean, literally, there have been almost two dozen of them. So I've kind of boiled them down into categories and general things and stuff like that here so that we can cover it in 5 or 6 minutes and hopefully make folks a little bit smarter traveler when it comes to compensation for getting bumped off an airplane.
There you go. And next week, I'll be posting on the Travel Guys radio site what to do if you are being dragged off a plane. It has to do with digging the heels in and a whole bunch of stuff like that. Okay, question number one, is it true airlines overbook flights, and is that legal?
Yes and yes. Airlines overbook flights every day. Southwest does it perhaps more than anyone else. They know based, it's perfectly legal. They are allowed to by law, and they tell you, and this is in one case where the airlines are probably telling the truth, that airfares are lower because they overbook flights, because they're able to get a higher number of people on the plane. I remember a Southwest flight to Las Vegas one night that was overbooked by 35 passengers. Unfortunately, that night, a whole lot of people showed up that weren't supposed to show up, and they were over like 11. And the guy was really panic stricken. But that's an unusual situation. Usually they're over two or three. The case of that United flight was four. And really the reason the United flight was over was because they had a displaced crew. If that hadn't happened, the computer would have done its job because there were four crew members, the way I understand it. So that meant that they were four seats over. So the computer had hit the number exactly. It was the crew that caused them to have the problem. Is it legal? Yes, it's legal. And it happens all the time. There's not anything illegal about an airline selling more. You would think that you couldn't. I mean, the Sacramento Kings don't sell 19,000 seats for an 18,000 seat arena and hope that 1,000 people don't show up. But the airline business is different. Hotels are the same way. Hotels overbook. Car rental companies overbook. If people not show up so often, there wouldn't be this problem.
All right. Listener writes, I was at the gate the other day for a Southwest flight and they were offering $250 in vouchers plus the value of the ticket that I was holding and my transportation the next day. Now, was that a good deal?
Okay. So the answer has something to do with timing and when the offer was made or accepted. And because the whole auction that goes on is kind of a science. United starts asking people if you want to volunteer when they know they have a flight that is in danger of being oversold when you're checking in on your phone or in the lobby of the airport. So they're asking already for volunteers. And if you indicate that you're willing to volunteer, then they tell you we may or may not need you. And this is what the compensation is. That will be the lowest amount. When you get to the gate, if they haven't gotten enough people or you're an airline that starts at the gate, then they're going to start with a number. It's always going to be vouchers. They're always going to have an expiration date. In some cases, they can't be used on any flight at any time, especially if you got them from an airline like Spirit or Frontier. You may not be able to. So be very careful when you're accepting funny money from airlines as a compensation, especially you get up into big money, like, you know, $600, $700, $800. You want to make sure that the restrictions, and you're right there and you're at the gate, somebody tells you something, you better get it in writing from them if you're going to accept goofy money from airlines. If it's a check and you can take it to your bank and put it in your bank account, that's entirely different. But So $250 in vouchers, the value of your ticket and your transportation the next day was probably a pretty standard Southwest offer. If it had gotten to be closer to departure time, you might have seen that offer increased to $300 or $400. But then again, they might have gotten enough volunteers at $250. And then if you were sitting there thinking, well, I'll pounce when it gets to a higher number, like any other auction, you might have lost out.
Listener writes, how exactly does an airline deny boarding?
A lot of ways, including what you saw on everybody's cell phone. Generally, though, it's done before you board the plane. Like we said, they start looking for volunteers early, and usually you'll hear that number get increased. You know, they're asking every 5 minutes in the airline boarding area, and the number starts going up, and that's a sign that they don't have enough volunteers and they're getting desperate. If you are willing at that time, at point in time, you might go, if they say the offer is 400, you might go up to the counter and say, look, you know, when the offer gets to 800, let me know. And because in many cases, the offer will get, then they'll hit your number because it's a lot easier to go to you than it is to keep sitting there and slowly building the number up. So you can go and make a counter offer if you wish. And that's something that I would suggest.
Cool. All right. Then our final question, can they really drag you off the plane? Is that legal?
Yeah, they can, but that should never happen. That was a case probably of some gate agents who boarded an airplane that they shouldn't have boarded, knowing they had more people than seats. A couple of things you need to know. Always obey orders given to you by a crew or law enforcement personnel on an airplane. Always. That doctor made a big mistake. Those were Chicago police officers. They weren't federal officers, but still, he should have obeyed them and gotten off the plane. They shouldn't have jerked him out of the plane and the seat and broken his face up either, but he didn't handle that situation right. If you are told to get off an airplane, you fight your battle in the terminal. You don't fight your battle on an airplane. So that's a bad place to do it. And even if you are 100% in the right, it's better. And even if it means that you're going to get delayed or whatever happens, you don't need to get yourself arrested, get yourself a huge fine. You don't need to be pushing and shoving people on an airplane. Get off the plane and fight your battle in the terminal.
Again, if you have questions for the Travel Guys, go to travelguysradio.com. There's a place right there you can fill out your question, and we'll get to it. All righty, coming up, Nick Valenzuela, hashtag travel, joins us. That's after the news next.
You can travel by road. You can fly by plane. You can take a ride on this one and only train.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Look, one of the things we do is talk about great stuff on the radio, and one of the things you can do is follow along with the program at travelguysradio.com. Now, our next interview, hashtag travel, with Nick Valenzuela is a perfect time to do that. So get that computer fired up if you're not in your car, of course.
Well, Nick last week gave us the first half of his Instagrammable California report. Basically, what this is what Nick feels are the most Instagrammable pictures all over California. And to give you an example, we started last week with Bodie State Park. We went to the sand dunes in Death Valley National Park and up to the Redwoods, to Hearst Castle. And we have the second half of Nick's report today. If you would like to follow along and look at these pictures in real time as Nick talks about them, you can go to travelguysradio.com and click on Instagrammable California. If you're out driving around, why, you can do it later on. And you can also see we've left all of the pictures there from the first half of Nick's report last week. Nick, welcome back to the Travel Guys. Nice to have you again, my friend.
Mark and Tom, thanks for having me again. A week really flies by, doesn't it?
It really, truly does. So you're out on the road. You told us last week you spent 2 months driving around California looking for the most Instagrammable places. Tell us, explain to those in the audience who are not Instagram participants why the most Instagrammable places in California would be significant.
Well, it was an amazing 2 months. And it's really an awesome opportunity to get to just drive around and focus on travel and social media. You know, social media is now a way that people travel, in a sense. You can look on your mobile screen, type in a location, and get to see thousands of pictures of different users who have their own scope or idea of a particular location, and you really get to travel the world that way. So I really wanted to contribute myself to my home state of California and find 10 amazing places that I can boast about and post about to showcase on my Instagram account, #travelreport, and show everybody what beautiful place California is, if that secret isn't already out yet.
All right. So the second half of your list here has the most unique, the most quirky or unusual, the most iconic, the most beautiful, and the most recognizable spots in California. Let's start with the most unique.
The most unique location I have is Anza Borrego Desert State Historic Park. It's in Borrego Springs, California. This is the largest state park in all of California, but it's still not very well known. The landscape of the place is beautiful and amazing, but what really makes this park unique, driving in and around the historic state park, there are these giant metal sculptures that just showcase all over the grounds of the park, ranging from a giant sea serpent-like dragon, dinosaurs, bald eagles, horses, cowboys, and whatever you can imagine. These relics just sort of pop up in the middle of a desert, and it's the most fascinating thing ever, and it's really art and nature combined at its most supreme, and it's pretty awesome. On the website there, you're going to see that giant dragon that I talked about. And it's
that's really cool.
Beautiful place. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you head towards the Southern California, there's a lot of things that are quirky about SoCal. You found one that I think a lot of people aren't familiar with. Tell us about your most quirky, unusual.
Well, the most quirky, unusual place I found, and it's going to sound a little bizarre, was the Hollywood Forever Cemetery out there in Hollywood, California, with the popular celebrity culture that we have now. Any person traveling down to L.A. is hoping to see their favorite star or celebrity. There is one way to sort of guarantee that you're going to get to see a star or get to see one of your favorites from the silver screen, and that is by actually going to this graveyard. And it sounds bizarre, but it has some of the most famous celebrities of yesteryear buried there, and the cemetery is actually encourages this sort of travel experience. They actually hold summertime movie showcases that they play in the graveyard, so you can sit down and picnic and watch a movie there. They have tour maps of the entire place, so you can kind of find your favorite celebrities there. There's peacocks walking around. It's a really, really unusual place to find yourself, but it's very interesting, and it's definitely an LA unique experience.
I think you captured it, the picture with the peacocks and the gravestones in the background. Again, we're talking with Nick Valenzuela. This is the hashtag Travel Report. Nick has come up with the 10 most Instagrammable places in California. You can go to travelguysradio.com if you want to see the photos. They are well worth seeing, especially if you happen to be a person who is a photographer yourself, then you probably will enjoy seeing these. Your most iconic was the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco.
Right. So what more epitomizes Northern California and San Francisco than the Golden Gate Bridge? It is recognizable worldwide. You show that to any person, they're usually going to respond to you, California, San Francisco. So obviously that's a place that you're going to want to take your own unique picture of, find your own way to get there. But and if you've never been to California, it's one of the must-see things. It's really amazing to see with the naked eye. You get to walk across the bridge if you would like it. It's about a mile across. And it's really just one of the most iconic images in the entire world. So to take your own picture of it, to have your own take of how you want to showcase the bridge is something I think every person that wants to showcase something on social media should really take advantage of if they're traveling out to California.
And California has just got beauty everywhere you look in so many different places. This had to have been a tough one to pick for you, Nick. I think, Mark, this is one of the reasons why he takes travelers there every year. Most beautiful, Yosemite National Park. Great picture of Half Dome there, my friend.
That's right, Tom. Yeah, it's one of the most amazing places on the planet. I can guarantee that to anyone. The picture online there is going to be of the tunnel view, which is a really easily accessible place to get to in the park.
Yep.
And it gives you a really easy view of El Capitan, Half Dome.
Bridal Veil Falls. Yep.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place to find yourself there. Yosemite's just a little over 125 years old now, and it's as far as being a national park, and it's just really one of the places if you want to appreciate just pristine, unkempt God's country out here in California. It's definitely one of the places that you have to see to really believe.
We have a lot of beautiful places in the state, Nick, but I would say probably Yosemite. I think you'd get the most agreement on Yosemite National Park. Maybe Sequoia is a close second. And that might be the only one I see that's missing from your list here is a giant Sequoia tree. But you did get Redwood Park in there. So last one, most recognizable, you picked the Hollywood sign. Can't say I disagree with you about that one.
That's right, Mark. Yeah. If anybody's really going to kind of close their eyes and think of California, that's probably going to be one of the first things anybody thinks of is that big Hollywood sign perched up over the hills there. Really interesting place to kind of try to get close to. The Hollywood sign is located in an area called Benedict Canyon. And that area in particular is a little weary of travelers and photographers trying to find their way there. So it's actually a little bit of an adventure to kind of find your way through this area and try to snap the best picture of the Hollywood sign that you can. Years and years and years ago, the sign used to say Hollywood Land. And then in the 40s, they changed it over. A little backstory on that. It was a real estate development area there. That's why the sign is actually even perched up on there. And then later on, they were like, okay, this is Hollywood. We're going to leave it as just Hollywood there. And it's a really iconic place.
Yep, it was originally designed originally to sell property and to sell a lot in Hollywood land. And who would know that all these years later that sign would be so iconic? Nick, I think you really captured a good look at the Golden State here. I will one more time encourage people to go to TravelGuysRadio.com and click on Instagrammable California and see all of Nick's photographs there. Good job, my friend. We will look forward to talking to you again down the road.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Coming up here on the Travel Guys, right after the break, we've got a very, very interesting guest all the way from, on the other side of the world, and he's going to talk about some pretty unusual things to see and places to go. That's next on the Travel Guys. We are the Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for taking some time out of your day to join us. We have a special guest on the line, and I don't know, Mark, this may be pretty close to the furthest away guest we've had in some time, calling all the way from Croatia. Tell us about our guest today.
Chris Bakke? Is that right, Chris? Am I saying that right? Bakke, rhymes with hockey. Okay, I was trying to get it right there. Chris is a blogger at a website called One Weird Globe. He has written about 20 books and itineraries that you can find on the website. He's from the United States. He moved to Seoul, South Korea to teach English.
Chris, tell us how it all came about, in short.
I logged online and I found a job teaching English in South Korea.
Traveling missionary guy, in a way. An educational mission.
Yeah, just about, yeah. So I taught English Monday to Friday and made it a point to start traveling the country on the weekends and, just going to a different place every week, kind of built the
ball. So how is it, Chris, that you decided to get into weird stuff?
So about 3 years into Korea, I realized I was kind of running out of places to go. You know, Korea, it's about the size of Indiana or Portugal, depending on which geographical reference you prefer. But 3 years in a fairly small country, traveling almost every week, traveling somewhere new almost every week, you begin to run out of places. So I began to look for what was lesser known, what was lesser traveled on the offbeat side of things in the country. And I wrote the book on offbeat Korea. And from there, it just sort of took off. People came to the site because they were looking for the bizarre, the unique. You know, places like Disneyland or Disney World, they need no introduction. But I want to take you to some places that are a lot less traveled.
So, Chris, you have, while you started doing this in Korea, you have approached a variety of different destinations. So just picking one here, you've got a three-day trip to Seattle. That's a regional destination for folks that are listening, for Travel Guys listeners. Tell me some weird things in Seattle that folks might want to check out on their next visit up there.
Sure. So in my book, weird is, you know, bizarre, quirky, unique, offbeat, places that may not be known about all that much. Obviously, Seattle, you've got places like the Seattle Pinball Museum. You pay a one-time fee and you play all the pinball you want for the rest of the night. You've got places like the Living Computer Museum, you know, a really good place that documents the history of computers, Seattle being a big Microsoft company, is your city, as you might guess. You get over to the Pike Place Market, you've got all the gum wall there and so on.
Back up to the Pinball Museum. You've touched on something that's close to my heart here. You can go to a pinball museum, and for a fee, you can play as long as you want?
Yep, as of right now, it's about $20. You get in, and you're there. You pay one fee. All the machines are set to free play. There are machines from the 1970s and earlier. There are some new machines as well. And it's literally two floors of pinball.
Wow.
And yeah, so it basically, once you paid your fee, go in, have fun. The only rules, basically, don't hit, don't hurt the machines, and don't abandon your game. You know, that way the next person that comes up can enjoy a fresh game.
Tom, this is pretty amazing. I mean, you know,
are you the pinball wizard guy?
Before the video days, yeah. Well, you know, I loved pinball machines, and even some of the slightly more modern kind of video pinball mix. But so Chris has hit on a place here for sure that the travel guy is going to love the next time that he gets up to Seattle. Tell us a little bit more.
So another fun place to go. Kind of a post-apocalyptic sort of feel to it. It's a place called the Gasworks Park, and this park holds the last remaining coal gasification plant. It's a lot of words to say it looks like a post-apocalyptic factory scene that overlooks, you know, sort of modern-day Seattle. So if you've got a fancy camera, or if you want to get some fun selfies with this, again, this post-industrial apocalyptic feeling to it, that's where you might go. If you've watched 10 Things I Hate About You or The Amazing Race, this park is in, you know, those programs.
Chris, you also talk about on the Seattle tour, here's an item that you've teased us with here, hide the kids for this adults-only tour of Seattle.
Yeah, so this is the Underworld tour of Seattle. And this company does adults-only tours, but they also have all-ages underground tours as well. But the adults only, this is a tale of how the modern-day Seattle city was built on top of old Seattle after the really big Great Fire. So you're literally going underground. Your tour guide's got a flashlight showing you some places from when Seattle was the most sinful city in the country. You learn about why prostitution got to be such a big thing there. And it's a walk through some of Seattle's kind of unknown underground areas. It's,
the underground, you know, area, Tom, if you've never seen it up there in Seattle, Tom, is or never been on the tour there, they do a wonderful, there isn't literally an underground city in Seattle. So approaching it from a slight adults-only point of view might be fun. Chris, before we let you go, we've talked a little bit about Seattle here. You've got spots all over the planet where you found weird things. I know you're traveling in Europe right now. Give us an item or two that you've run into recently that you really thought fit into the oddity category.
Yeah, the top of your weirdness list there, Chris.
Okay. Well, the weirdest place I've ever been has got to be a place in South Korea. And the story here is this Korean king centuries ago decided to keep the placentas and umbilical cords of his kids.
Well, that is pretty weird.
That's right up there, I would say.
That is pretty weird. Yeah, so basically the story was everything with the royalty in Korea was sacred, was holy, and that included the placentas and the umbilical cords. And if you get to this place, it's in the middle of nowhere Korea. It's like a three-bus sort of place to get to. And all you see are these jars, a couple dozen large ceramic-type jars, and they're surrounded by a stone fence. The story behind the story that makes you appreciate the place. And the tour guide on site, of course, is able to give you an appreciation of that.
All right, pull one from Europe for us, Chris.
All right, something pretty close I went to recently here in Zagreb was the Museum of Broken Relationships. Now, this museum is basically a place where people have donated their stuff. Maybe they got it from their ex, maybe they had it themselves. But this is basically a collection of breakups, of people not really wanting to keep this thing anymore. So it's not just about the thing. It's not about the exhibit. It's about the story behind it. Why is this thing so special to them? What makes this thing so attached to them? So some of the things that you might find there might be like a letter that they wrote. You know, there's all sorts of unusual stuff. It's not about the things, it's about the stories. And it uses the things to get you in the door so you can read the stories about, you know, these tragic relationships or whatever.
Chris Bakke, who is the lead blog man here at One Weird Globe. If you go to travelguysradio.com, we will have a link there. You can go online, you can purchase his books, you can purchase his itineraries even, the Seattle one he was talking about. You can just print a PDF for only $5 online. So if you were headed to one of these great domestic or international destinations, this might be an opportunity to get just something a little bit off the beaten track onto your itinerary. Chris, thanks for joining us today on The Travel Guys.
Thanks for having me.
Back here, I was going to tell the folks... Wait
a minute, Mark. You forgot to turn your mic on. Okay, we are the Travel Guys.
And shall we tell the people we were actually down the hall doing something?
Yeah. We should.
Well, probably,
I know. Albert, our engineer, ran down the hallway and said, your interview is almost over. And we were there actually working on an interview that you're going to hear next week, which was super, super important.
Listen, before folks go away, we got 2 minutes here. I wanted to talk a little bit about something really cool we did last week. One of our Sports Leisure Vacations groups went to Arizona. It was a mystery tour. So the folks didn't know this was going to happen, and I flew in a day later, and we went out to Seligman, Arizona, which is a wide spot in the road, and created a 90th birthday party, a surprise birthday party for one of the icons of the road, an old barber in Seligman, Arizona named Angel Delgadillo, who really was the first guy who started the revival of Route 66, a barber in a town that got bypassed by the interstate. And suddenly his town was dying, and he just decided he wasn't going to take it laying down. And so he got the road designated as historic. He got an off-ramp for his town off the freeway. He built a gift shop, and now the town is thriving with gift shops and gas stations. And he turned 90 years old last week, and we were there to share that special moment with him. And it was a really cool moment. He's kind of like the Yogi Berra of the highway, of the old highway. So it was really a lot of fun, and we had a bunch of Sports Leisure travelers there. And so to Angel Delgadillo, who turned 90 years old, the genes this man has in his family, his 93-year-old brother, his 95-year-old sister, and his 97-year-old brother were all in attendance.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's great.
Just kind of a guy who refused to take no for an answer. So anyway, that was kind of fun, and I just wanted to tell folks about it.
Well, all right. Well, good for you. And you say that you and a group of Sports Leisurers put this birthday party
on? We put this on.
Well,
and we're in the
amazing
world of Sports Leisure Vacations,
yes,
down the California coast, and a group heads for New York on Thursday, which is where I will catch up with you next week.
All right. Gwen Duncan joins us next week. We'll be here with more stuff to make you a smarter traveler, right here on KFBK at 3 o'clock. Mark?
Remember to dance like nobody's watching.
Stay well, my friends. We'll see you next week on The Travel Guys.